Good morning and welcome to another episode of the O'Leary Partners Observations, aka the OPO podcast, which is a series of one-of-a-kind observations provoking aha moments for your personal or professional life from influential Floridian professionals, top healthcare physicians, and UBS thought leaders or partners from our orbit. I'm your host, Gabrielle O'Leary, a Senior Wealth Strategy Associate for the O'Leary Partners at UBS Private Wealth Management. I'm located in Miami, Florida, and I can be reached at 212-626-8735 or gabrielle.o'leary@ubs.com. Our special guests here today are Barry Bichelle, a realtor at Beachfront Realty, and John O'Leary, Managing Director at the UBS O'Leary Partners. John and Barry, thank you so much for joining me here today for our Financial Future of South Florida Real Estate episode. To give the audience a brief agenda, in today's episode, we'll explore the latest developments in one of the most vibrant housing markets in the country. Specifically, we'll address current markets, highlighting key indicators that are influencing buyer-seller behavior and property values. We'll also discuss diverse investment opportunities available, as well as the impact foreign buyers have on the local market and how their preferences are shaping demand. Finally, we'll touch on the role of real estate as a retirement strategy and discuss economic factors that could influence future market dynamics. So let's get started. First, I'd like to introduce my father, John O'Leary, to the OPO podcast. For those of you who don't know him, he's the head of our investment group, managing director, and private wealth advisor. Additionally, John has received two accolades from Forbes for 2024 for being a best-in-state wealth advisor and best-in-state wealth management teams. John, I think it goes without saying, but I'm very excited to have you here for your first episode.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure. Looking forward to it.
Fantastic. I'd also like to welcome Barry Bichelle, a seasoned realtor from Beachfront Realty in Aventura, Florida. Barry, we're thrilled to have you here with John and I today.
I'm thrilled to be here. I love talking real estate.
Wonderful, as do we. So for our listeners, Barry brings an exceptional understanding of South Florida residential and commercial real estate backed by extensive experience in asset valuation. He combines a deep well of industry knowledge with years of hands-on experience to provide valuable insights to investor groups, private equity, venture capital, and asset management firms. Barry excels at evaluating assets under pressure by identifying, vetting, and negotiating prime opportunities. He's particularly skilled at finding solutions that add value and mitigate risk. Lastly, he's very accomplished when it comes to collaborating with high net worth individuals and is highly connected with the broker, lender, and investor communities. Barry, that's quite the track record you have. I'm curious to hear, what does having an eye for value mean to you?
Thank you for your kind words, Gabrielle.
Of course.
24 years. Boots on the ground, originally from New York City. I know this South Florida market very, very well. And that's what it comes down to, is local market knowledge. And yes, I have a keen eye for identifying and maximizing value in every opportunity.
Wonderful. Very happy to hear it. And as much as I believe that having an eye for value is critical, I think that understanding broader market trends is equally important. And I think that Miami real estate market has experienced considerable change in recent years, marked by both rising demand by local and international buyers, and you have that influx of new residents and significant price appreciation, particularly in luxury properties. And the city has really become a magnet for out-of-state buyers, driven by factors like remote work flexibility and Florida's tax advantages. So here's an interesting tidbit for our listeners that in 2022, Miami ranked as the second most popular destination for high net worth individuals, with 1,200 millionaires choosing to make Miami their home that year. And as we progress through the rest of the year and into the future, we think that it's imperative to understand how several factors will shape the market. And those could include falling interest rates, rising costs across the board, whether it's insurance premiums or HOA fees, and evolving buyer preferences. And understanding those dynamics will be key to navigating the market effectively. So Barry, drawing from your background, how do you think the Miami real estate market has evolved over the past few years? And what key trends, whether that's positive or negative, do you see shaping the market for the remainder of the year and in 2025?
Great question. Certainly, there's been a post-COVID paradigm shift that we all felt. People had their eye on South Florida before COVID. With the pandemic coming and the work from home, people from all over the world were moving here, and they still are. It's got good tax policy, good business regulations. We're in an environment where interest rates are coming down, whether it be by 100 or 150 basis points. That's always good for real estate. Having said that, we are not as interest rate sensitive as many other locales around the country in that we have a large amount of cash transactions. Very dynamic market that you need to have your eye on and, you know, watch the bouncing ball all the time. You can't sit in New York or LA and Chicago and decide I'm going to buy this or buy that. You need a guy that knows what he's doing.
Absolutely. And what do you think is driving a lot of those large cash transactions?
Offshore capital. You know, in a plethora of 401k and IRA cash outs and selling their first home, as far as guys from the U.S. and the offshore capital continues to come in from Latin America, and it's a flight to safety. These guys figure even if it doesn't go up, the asset's safer in the U.S. than it is in their home country.
Absolutely. And I think Miami has also seen a lot of runaway price growth, particularly when you're talking about the onset of the pandemic, where prices now are almost 50% higher than they were at the end of 2019, even though they've cooled somewhat along the way with higher mortgage rates. What do you think about that trend in particular?
I think it's a story of submarkets. You know, you have the Brickell market, which was the gateway to Latin America and the Latin American banking hub to begin with. Now, several major firms from up in New York and the Northeast are down in Brickell's, like little Wall Street.
Exactly.
So, and then now the downtown area of Miami is flourishing. The Wynwood submarket is doing very well. And, you know, it's still happening. Prices are stable. Inventory is reasonable. Many people still want to be here in South Florida. Needless to say, not paying state tax continues to incentivize many people.
That's a really interesting point. Couldn't agree with you more. So now that we've covered the latest trends in the Miami real estate market, let's switch gears a bit and dive. What does that mean for investors? And as you're talking about with people flocking to the area, and let's call this, you know, essentially Manhattan South, right? The key question on everyone's mind is, where are the real opportunities to capitalize on this momentum? And really, whether you're a seasoned investor or just getting started, there's a lot to unpack in South Florida, where whether you have upscale developments or high-end waterfront properties, also commercial real estate and mixed-use developments in emerging neighborhoods. And really, to put it plainly, to your point, Barry, Miami has become a prime destination for real estate investments, particularly for high-net-worth individuals looking to diversify their portfolios. So with a lot of these factors in mind, what unique opportunities should high-net-worth individuals consider when investing in real estate?
This is a good place to invest. I would suggest they take advantage of any 1031 exchange opportunities that might avail themselves. And also placement into multifamily or mini storage. There's some interesting opportunities in those arenas from a commercial perspective. And on the residential side, we have some of the world-class buildings going on down here. Look at the Waldorf Astoria in downtown. 100 stories built by PMG, one of the biggest developers in the world. We got Cipriani down in Brickell, the Standard Residences in Wynwood. Some good stuff. I'd love to brainstorm with you.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of glitz and glam in Miami, so it's a very insightful observation. So let's transition over to John. We've heard about it from the real estate perspective. Now let's talk about it from the financial advisor team perspective. So John, what do you think makes real estate an appealing investment opportunity for an investor that's looking to reduce risk solely than relying on just their equity or fixed income portfolio?
Great question, Gabrielle. So real estate is an appealing investment for anyone looking to reduce the risk of their stock and bond portfolio. Two main reasons: it offers diversification and stability. If you think about real estate investments, they provide a tangible asset that can offer steady income through either rental yields, which in many cases are less volatile than stock dividends. And additionally, real estate tends to have a low correlation with stocks and bonds. So that can help to balance a portfolio during extreme market fluctuations. And you could even take that a little bit further and diversify in real estate across many different property types and locations, which by doing this, that will further mitigate your risk and provide a buffer against any localized economic downturns. And as Barry pointed out before, investing in real estate as a category is a very broad-based statement. But now if you get a little bit granular, you can look to invest in areas like the multifamily market, the single-family residences, or two other areas that are extremely popular with investors is warehouse facilities or even storage facilities. And to sum up that question, if you think of it in terms of if you own a rental property with leases in place, you have a predictable income stream, which is a fantastic thing. And in addition to that, you have the ability to have an annual reset to increase the rent to absorb for any additional increases in inflation. So that's what really makes it appealing for a client to diversify their assets.
That's a great point. You're spot on. And just to dive a little bit deeper on that, can you elaborate a little bit more on why an investor would want to pay, in particular, closer attention to investing in a multifamily property? And with that, what criteria should they use to evaluate?
Exactly. So think of it like this. Think of it if you're buying like this. I'm going to use an example of a 4-unit multifamily property. You're obviously going to deal with a professional real estate team to do their due diligence in terms of what is the actual price that you would be paying for that unit. But then you have to look a little bit deeper. And in my opinion, when you're buying multifamily, you want to buy multifamily as a value investor. What do I mean by that? If you're buying, let's say, simple round numbers, 4 units, $4 million, hypothetically, and the average rent, this complex that you're buying, is $2,000 a month, and the seller has owned it for 20 to 30 years. Obviously, on the surface, that's someone that just wants to get the rental income that they're receiving. They're very comfortable with the tenant base that's in place. But from a value perspective, if current rents in the area are $2,500 for the same units, and you're looking at a 4-unit that the average rents are $2,000, well, right off the bat, you've got the ability, once you acquire the asset, to increase rents. And if you increase from $2,000 to $2,500, within a 12-month period, you could target a potential 25% increase in rent. What does that do? It might not affect the market value instantly, but what it does is it affects the value of the property from a cash flow basis. And you're increasing your cash flow, thus to an investor that if you were to potentially sell it, property on paper is worth more within those 12 months. So that's what an investor should be looking for when you're buying multifamily. Look for opportunities that the rental rates are below the market value. So when you can transition into that property over 1 to 2 years and you have the ability to increase rents, you have the ability also to increase the value of that property.
You're making a really interesting point there, and I love what you're saying about increasing cash flow across the board. I know that we've mentioned this a couple times in previous episodes on the OPO podcast about our UBS Wealthway framework, which is a framework designed to segment your wealth in 3 different dimensions. And that first key bucket, that liquidity bucket to the 1 to 3 year time horizon, falls perfectly right within that when you start to think about what could I do to maximize my short-term cash. So I like how we've really whetted our appetite for Miami real estate by exploring the multifamily property landscape. But let's turn our attention to another really exciting segment of the market that Barry gave us a preview earlier with luxury real estate. And for our listeners, it's really important to be aware that Miami is famous for the luxury real estate market. In fact, in 2022, Miami recorded its highest ever residential sale for $106.9 million for a penthouse at the Arte Surfside building. And several factors influence property values in this sector, including its extremely desirable location, world-class amenities, and resort-style living features. And with prices in the luxury market are often fluctuating, buyers need to carefully assess these factors to ensure a solid investment. Ensuring a solid investment is the name of the game. So, Barry, in your experience, what are the main drivers of property values in Miami's real estate market, and how can buyers make informed investment decisions?
Okay. Certainly, there's a global appeal for the architecture and the lifestyle and everything that South Florida affords. You have the Bahamas right offshore, you have the Keys, the airports fly to anywhere in the world, the aging population, baby boomers are here. It's a convergence of many things. But what it comes down to is good guidance, where you want to be, what developer you want to align yourself with, spend some time, get to know your client, and make an informed decision.
All great points. And when you're sitting down with clients and peeling back the onion, what sort of checklist do you use to evaluate, is this an informed decision?
Well, is this an investment property? Or is it a second home or a third home? How long is your acquisition period? How long do you plan on keeping the property for? Just get to know the client as well as possible.
We agree. And over here at the O'Leary Partners, getting to know the client is paramount. So when we get to know our clients, John, what would you say that financial advisor teams do in helping real estate buyers make informed decisions?
The financial advisor team plays a crucial role in helping clients evaluate real estate purchases by providing a comprehensive analysis of their current financial situation and their long-term goals. We really want to assess how buying real estate can fit into the client's overall financial plan. We have to consider factors such as risk management, any potential debt levels, and also future financial independence. A good advisory team can also help clients navigate through market trends and discuss optimizing various financing options and also manage debt strategically. Additionally, we want to make sure that we collaborate with real estate professionals to make sure that any potential investment is aligned with the client's broader financial strategy. I think another part, in addition to what I said previously, is at UBS, we have resources at our disposal. So we look to utilize any what's called relevant intellectual capital that our firm provides that would be of any beneficial interest to our clients. And what do I mean by that? You know, for example, where we see opportunity in the real estate sector, or on the other side, where we may see signs of stress or deterioration. All this information, we want to be able to pass it along to the client so they can digest it and make an educated decision before they effectively enter into a purchase agreement.
Couldn't have said it better myself, and also chime in here that financial advisor teams essentially act as a guide in helping real estate buyers make well-rounded, informed decisions that consider their full financial picture and long-term goals. And we can provide critical analysis and advice to ensure that real estate purchases are a sound investment, both now and in the future. And speaking of real estate purchases, I'd like to touch on another major factor driving Miami's real estate market, and that's foreign investment. And for our listeners, foreign investment has played a significant long-term role in Miami's real estate market, contributing to its growth and international appeal. You have buyers from Latin America, Europe, and Asia that are drawn to Miami's luxury properties, both for lifestyle and business opportunities. And I read recently that approximately 40% of Miami's real estate transactions are specifically from this demographic. So Barry, given this context, how do you think foreign investment shape the local market? And what advice would you offer to overseas investors looking to enter the Miami real estate market?
It has and will continue to influence the market greatly, given the geopolitical risks across the world, certainly in South America. Coming to South Florida, putting some money in real estate here, be it multifamily, value add, to John's point, multifamily value add is a great place to put capital, or a second or third homes in one of the new buildings here. You just have to really focus on what your goals are and merge those thoughts with your real estate advisor.
All valid points. So just kind of sum it up there. Foreign investors may want to look to diversify, may want to invest in a more stable market than their home country, and also thinking about reducing their volatility profile, which I think is paramount considering everything that's going on in the world from a geopolitical risk perspective. And even though foreign investment is certainly propelling real estate market, we also need to consider how can investors monetize that? And how could we explore how this unique landscape could present an opportunity for investors, whether you're abroad or you're local? And here at UBS, we see real estate becoming increasingly recognized as a key component of retirement planning. And whether it's generating passive income or securing long-term value, real estate plays plays a vital role in building a solid financial future for retirement. So, John, I know this is your bread and butter, but how do you see Miami real estate fitting into long-term wealth planning for retirement, particularly when it comes to rental income and property appreciation?
Great point. Super question. So think of it. Miami real estate can significantly enhance long-term wealth or retirement through either rental income or just pure property appreciation. The city has a robust rental market, and that is driven by tourism and also a growing job sector. You think about it, it also offers attractive yields ranging between 4 to 6% for long-term rentals and even higher for shorter-term rentals. Additionally, Miami's property values tend to appreciate over time, you know, making Miami real estate a stable investment. And there's excessive demand for rental properties in prime areas, such as Brickell and Miami Beach, which further supports this growth, ensuring a steady cash flow that can supplement retirement income while also building equity. I think in addition, it's important to determine how much the client will be willing to engage, though, in day-to-day operations of their investment. When you look at it, I have discussions with our clients in terms of, even though you want to invest in good areas and you want this as part of your overall portfolio, you have to determine, are you going to be hands-on with this investment, number one? Number two, do you have boots on the ground in the area? Because you may not be in that area, but if you're not there, you have to have a trusted real estate team, individual or property management that you could engage in. And they have to determine, are you going to manage this property from out of state? And if you are going to manage it from out of state, then that also would become more challenging. Not that you can't do it, but you just have to be aware of what are the challenges to managing a property from out of state. And in addition to that, finally, are you considering a third-party property management team? If you are doing that, they can really add value, but also you're paying a price for that too, and that's got to be figured into your cost analysis. You may be paying a property manager average from 4 to 6% as a percentage of your revenue that you're actually taking in. So in my opinion, these are all points that you have to consider before you actually start the purchasing of the investment property.
Great. Thank you for all those points. And certainly having that hands-on, boots-on-the-ground perspective is imperative. And I think we kind of witnessed that really firsthand over the past month, right, with two hurricanes hitting Florida with Hurricane Helene and Hurricane Milton. Certainly a lot of uncertainty going on. And I like how you said you want to keep a close eye on your real estate and prepare it for unpredictable storms. But we also really need to navigate financial turbulence that could potentially arise when considering to purchase real estate or while you already own it. So I know we touched on this briefly, but financial turbulence like interest rate fluctuations and economic uncertainty are significant factors that could impact the Miami real estate market. And Miami really is no exception to all of these, right? In recent weeks, you had the Federal Reserve hinting at more potential interest rate cuts, where UBS's October 2024 house view is that we expect the Fed to cut rates at 25 basis points at each of the two remaining FOMC meetings in 2024, and then slow to 25 basis points per quarter in 2025, which could lower borrowing costs and stimulate demand for homes and investment properties. Additionally, economic uncertainty that we briefly mentioned earlier, like increased costs, may influence buyers' sentiment, shifting to shifts in purchasing behavior and investment strategies. So, John, given these dynamics, how do you anticipate interest rate changes and economic conditions will affect Miami real estate? And what strategies should investors consider to navigate this evolving landscape?
So to anticipate interest rate changes and economic shifts affecting the Miami real estate, investors, number one, should monitor the position of the Federal Reserve's policies. Recent rate cuts signal potential economic concerns and aim to lower your borrowing costs. That in itself could boost the Miami's housing market by actually increasing your purchasing power and also stimulating buying activity. So strategies for investors, what should they look for? Number one, look, again, as we mentioned previously, diversify your investments. You can consider things like single-family homes, condos, multifamily, warehouses, storage facilities. Again, key is to diversify like anything else among many different asset classes. Also capitalize on lower rates. If rates are going lower, your buying power is increased. You want to use that trade to increase your purchasing power. And again, still stay informed by monitoring the economic indicators about inflationary trends and any regulatory trends that may affect the market. So, Gabrielle, you asked about predicting interest rates and where we're going with that. So my thought process with it is predicting interest rates, the exact change in interest rates is extremely difficult. What is important, though, is that if you are considering investing in Miami real estate, as I said before, consider the type of asset. Secondly, consider the expected time frame you will be holding that asset to formulate a debt strategy if you are using financing versus cash. That's important to mirror that strategy to align with how long you're going to own that property. And the economic conditions can be very tricky. You have things such as structural reform in the context of Miami real estate. That could refer to any changes in the regulatory framework that could potentially govern the housing sector there. And that usually aims to enhance the efficiency of the real estate market by addressing any issues like climate change, affordability, and even disaster resilience. You have to really figure out where does real estate fit into the portfolio? Okay, really, where does it fit in? And all these factors are very important. And then what also is important is to figure out with interest rates, what direction in the short term they're going and how does that affect other areas of the interest rate, of the actual yield curve. For example, the correlation between short-term interest rates and long-term interest rates.
I like what you're saying here about investors looking to real estate as an investment, and also the key components of that, right, is from a foundational perspective, staying informed, considering what type of asset are you looking to purchase, the particular time frame, and then all overall, how does it fit into your plan? And just from, I can say, recent conversations with clients over the last couple months, you have a really interesting perspective going on here where a lot of investors are looking to dip their toe into the real estate market, but they're sitting on the sidelines because they're thinking, okay, the Federal Reserve is looking to significantly cut rates down the line. Do I wait to jump into this market or do I go right ahead and dive headfirst? So can we talk a little bit more about a very interesting relationship that we're seeing right now with the Federal Reserve lowering rates and the relationship to mortgage rates? Because you would expect mortgage rates would be falling right now after the Federal Reserve cut interest rates by a half a point last month. But interestingly enough, mortgage rates jumped higher. And the latest data from Freddie Mac show that the average 30-year mortgage rate had actually increased to 6.4%. And that's more than a quarter point higher than it was 2 weeks ago. So, John, break it down for us. What's going on here?
Great question. That's something we consistently talk with clients and also prospects about. So the relationship between the federal funds rate and the 10-year treasury is complex. Okay? While the federal funds rate directly influences short-term interest rates, its impact on the 10-year yield is less direct. So you have to think about it in terms of most of your mortgage rates and borrowing costs are tied into your 10-year treasury yield. And your 10-year treasury, you know, currently today, it's at 4.24. So it's doing exactly what you had just mentioned, Gabrielle. Fed lowered rates in September, short-term. And what happened? The dichotomy just switched. Long-term yields sold off, and they've been selling off over the last few weeks since the Fed had lowered. So that's due to several factors. Number one, economic growth expectations. Investors anticipated stronger economic growth, leading them to demand higher yields as compensation for the opportunity costs compared to riskier assets like stocks. Number two, inflation expectations. Higher expected inflation prompts investors to seek higher yields to offset their eroding purchasing power of returns. And last but not least, monetary policy. Despite the Federal Reserve rate cuts, the market's expectation of fewer rate cuts and a resilient economy have pushed higher yields in the short term. I think in terms of how do you mitigate through this, it's analogous to a lot of things when you think about it, even investing in the stock market. We cannot time investing in the stock market. You have to put a financial plan together and believe in your plan and consistently monitor your plan. And you cannot time the market at all. And I kind of feel the same way with real estate. You can't time your real estate. You either believe that it fits into a piece of your overall financial plan and you look to buy that asset because you cannot time it. Rates could go higher in the next 6 or 9 months and rates could go lower. Rates could go lower and there's no way for you to time it. And rates could go higher and property prices could also go higher. It could be 6, 9 months from now, could be 10, 15% higher. And it's driven by different indicators. Well, there's no perfect science with actually timing it, unfortunately. I wish there was, if everyone could do that, but it doesn't work that way.
Well, you're telling me you don't have a crystal ball?
No, I don't. If I did, you wouldn't be able to get a hold of me.
All kidding aside, that's a great synopsis. And I think it all just brings back to the importance of speaking to experienced professionals, right? And creating a financial plan and sticking to it. So as we wrap up today's conversation, it's crucial to reflect on some of the key insights that make a real difference when navigating the real estate market. And with so much valuable knowledge shared by both John and Barry, there's usually one standout takeaway that leaves a lasting impression. So I'll start here with you, John. What would you say is the most powerful aha moment from our discussion that you want our audience to carry with them moving forward?
Yes, I've got two ideas quickly.
I guess I'll allow that.
Thank you. Appreciate it. So you want to be able to utilize a concept in investment real estate called cost segregation. And what is a cost segregation study? Cost segregation study in real estate is a tax strategy that involves analyzing a property to reclassify it and accelerate the depreciation of its components. This allows property owners to maximize their depreciation deductions, and you can reduce tax liabilities and increase your cash flow by identifying assets that can be depreciated over shorter periods of time, such as a 5, 7, or 15 years. Instead of a standard 27 and a half years for residential property and 39 years for commercial properties. So that is something that, again, you should discuss with your tax advisor, your CPA, or your accounting firm. And number two on this, if you're looking to diversify and purchase real estate, potentially in the Miami market, you need to put a competent team in place. And a competent team would be the following. Number one, a competent realtor to analyze the market from the purchasing price perspective with the trends, where it has been over the past couple years, and any helpful information on where it's going. Realtors can be extremely valuable. And in addition to that, they'll be able to help you with the anticipated current market trends in the area that you're looking to potentially have an investment property and the forecast for that in the future. Number two, you want to have a good attorney. You need a good attorney to craft your rental and leasing documents that will try to protect and insulate you from undue liability. And last but not least, a good accountant and a CPA firm to set up the most beneficial tax entity structure and to understand how to utilize a cost segregation study and how to record improvements when you're doing improvements to your property, whether you're going to expense those items or whether you're going to capitalize it. Those are discussions that any client should have with their account and how those improvements would actually benefit the overall asset from a tax standpoint.
Wow, that's very powerful. Barry, let's switch it over to you. Can you top that?
Boy, that's a tough act to follow, John. You make some powerful, salient points, but I think they all kind of funnel down in the same direction. Local market knowledge. That's my aha, or that's what I want the aha for the listeners to be. Hey, tell me about this market. Let's understand the dynamics and let's invest.
I love that. very important to be able to not only understand, but figure out where are the opportunities. So that's really all we have here for today, everyone. And thank you especially to Barry Bischel from Beachfront Realty for your participation and continued support. I learned a lot from all of your perspectives, and I want to say a huge thank you to our audience for tuning into the OPO podcast. And on behalf of the O'Leary Partners, I hope you found today's topics impactful. And as a follow-up, John O'Leary and I are always accessible for questions or a second opinion, especially if you'd like to take a deeper dive into your personal real estate scenario. And with that, be on the lookout for future episodes with Aha Moments. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.